Well, tonight we're going to, for our devotional, we'll be looking at one verse, Numbers 30, verse 9. Numbers chapter 30, verse 9. And I'm going to read it. Also, any vow of a widow or a divorced woman by which she has bound herself shall stand against her. Any vow of a widow or divorced woman shall stand against her. So what's going on here? In this chapter of Numbers, Moses brings commands from the Lord to the tribal leaders. And the entire chapter is concerned with the word of a woman. If a woman says something, is it binding? Binding on her, binding on the people around her. Does it count? If a woman makes a promise to the Lord, for instance, like Hannah, promising to give up her son, to the temple service, is the family bound by what she promised? If a woman makes a promise to others, maybe like a promise to house a prophet, a promise to house a missionary, is the family obligated by her words? If a woman speaks rashly without thinking it through, does she have to follow through? So from this verse, let's briefly look at three things. First of all, the equal humanity of women, the equal humanity of women, and then secondly, the unequal circumstances of women, the unequal circumstances of women, and then thirdly, the high worth of women. So the equal humanity of a woman, first of all. Where do we see that in this verse, the equal humanity of a woman? Well, actually, what you see in this chapter is all through this whole chapter, you see that the words of a woman are just as binding as the words of a man. And we'll dig into that. The chapter deals with some various cases where the people to whom the woman is socially or societally bound, they'll be affected. So what do we do then? But in those times, that's just the situation in which these questions are being played out. In those times, a woman was part either of her father's household, or if she married, her husband's household. And so whatever she promised, whether it was to buy a cow or to contract a service from someone, it would not only affect her, it would affect her household. That's just the nature of the society in which she was embedded. And so this chapter deals with the various ways that the father or the husband had this little 24-hour right of refusal window. And the point is, though, that the word of a woman was just as binding as the word of a man. But if she was in a family, her husband had this very limited window in which he could disengage them from her word. So in verse 9, our verse, we've got a woman that's got none of those ties. She's got no bond to a father, no bond to a husband. She's divorced or she's widowed. And there's no second person, no other person in that picture. It's this special case where we consider just the woman's word, without having a related man in the circumstance. And so the woman's word has just as much worth as the word of a single man here. And that's because a woman is made in the image of God just as much as a man is. Women equally share the image of God just as men share the image of God. Genesis 1:27, so God created man, and it's the same word that's used for humanity. So a right understanding is, so God created humanity in his own image. In the image of God, he created humanity. Male and female, he created them. Males do differ from females, but both are equally made in the image of God. Now, some people want to say that women are below men in dignity. But that just doesn't hold up. We'll see more about that later. But that doesn't hold up even just on this one creational point. Women bear the image of God, just as men. So they're not below men in dignity. But on the other hand, some people want to say that women are identical to men, not just equally bearing God's image, but they want to say women are equivalent in essence to men. But what Scripture provides for us is both complex and mysterious. Genesis 1, God makes humanity, male and female, in his own image. Genesis 2, the procedure that God uses and employs is different for men and women. Adam is formed from dust. Eve is formed from Adam's rib. All future men and women are born from a woman. So when you put that all together, it's not simple. It's complex. And Scripture leaves mystery about all of this on the table. It doesn't answer all the questions that are stirred. Men and women have differences, and we don't have to ignore that. But we also don't have to have exhaustive knowledge and understanding about what that means. It just is. So we understand, we embrace the equal humanity of women and men, and we also understand and embrace that there are differences in creation between men and women. So we value a woman's words. Husbands in 1 Peter are commanded, honor their wives. Honor the words spoken by wives. Honor what women say. So that takes us to the next thing, the unequal circumstances of women. And I'll just briefly touch on this. Women in the days of Moses, they were in a society that had roles, and their roles limited them and constrained them. In that culture, for instance, women could not own property, except in very unusual circumstances. Women could not override the vows or the promises of their father or their husbands. So these are some of the kind of circumstances of women's situation in those days and times. And in this passage, one unequal circumstances was that the father or the husband of the woman held the right to nullify what the woman promised if they made that decision in a very narrow window of time. But that was then. In today's times, women still face unequal circumstances. Let's just take one thing that's basically always been true. Take childbirth. The carrying and the delivery of a baby, that affects women unequally. The pregnancy and the delivery of a baby, it just doesn't limit or affect the man in the same way. It's different. And then even the consequences of sin, the pains of childbirth, they fall solely, unequally, on the woman. So the circumstances of women are unequal. Now, thirdly and finally, let's look at the high worth of women. The high worth of women. Women face unequal circumstances. Let's look at their high worth. This chapter kind of goes through all these different ways, numerous ways where the father or the husband can get a woman released from her vow. But the chapter ends with a very strange case. If a man hears about his wife's vow and he does not cancel it within that little 24-hour window, if he doesn't cancel it, it says her words, her vow, it stands. It's binding. And then verse 15 says, if the husband, after that, cancels her vow, after the cancellation period already elapsed, it says, he shall bear her guilt. He shall bear her iniquity, it says in other translations. What that's saying is this, when a wife made a rash promise, if the husband tried to break her promise, he would bear her guilt. It would be as if she tried to break her word. In the gospel, the Bible casts all of us, men and women, casts all of us as women, as female. We are the wife of Christ. Christ is our husband. And in the gospel, Jesus is the husband who can release us from our foolish debts. And in the gospel, Jesus is the husband who takes on himself the iniquity, the guilt, the blame of his wife. Why? Why does he do that? It's because he values his bride so much. That is the high worth of a woman. In the gospel, Jesus found a woman so precious. He's willing to take her guilt, take her name, take her debt, take her consequences, so that she would not have to pay. And it's expounded more, Ephesians 5, Jesus is the husband who doesn't despise his woman for all of the entanglements that she brings into the marriage. On the contrary, Ephesians 5:27, he sees loveliness in her. It says Jesus gave himself that he might present her to himself, a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing. So believer, you are his woman. He values you. He loves you.